Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 25th, 2019. Today, unfortunately, we're not joined by our co-host, Mariah Tinger, who will be back next week. But we are happy to be joined by a young man, a member of the Sunrise Movement here in Boston. His name is Chris D'Agostino. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Welcome aboard. Thank you so much for taking the time. So Chris, I attended the beginning show of the Sunrise Movement Green New Deal Road Tour, which was sponsored by the Sunrise Movement, which I think is Sunrise Movement is primarily centered with young activists. But they certainly have some high-powered support. There were various kinds of politicians talking about the Green New Deal, which is a big deal all oven by itself. And I want to hear from you. Tell me if I got that first part right. But I'm interested, what is the Sunrise Movement? What do you want people to know as to what the Sunrise Movement is?
Okay, fantastic. So the Sunrise Movement has a goal of addressing climate change on the scale required by the recent IPCC report through policy. So it's about getting politicians to create climate legislation. It's about stigmatizing politicians who take money from fossil fuel interests and bringing in new politicians that don't take money from the fossil fuel industry.
And how did it get started? I mean, it seems for people who have been following the climate story for years had sort of fallen into a trance almost. And it seems like the Sunrise Movement, which is, tell me, it's primarily younger Americans, right? It's not it's out of colleges, right?
And yes.
How did it get started?
So it started in 2015, I believe, by 12 students, or they might not have been students, but they were young people involved in the climate movement. And from 2015 to 2017, the goal was mostly to raise awareness of the role fossil fuel money plays in politics and to make noise about this issue. And once the election in 2016 happened, there was a bit of a shift in gears towards more of a legislative route. So instead of just raising awareness, Sunrise took an active role in electing people who would advocate for ambitious climate legislation.
How did my understanding is that the group started here in Boston, but it seems to have people all over the country being part of the movement. How did they, I guess I have this classic college college to college kind of network, but you're saying it was bigger than that or sort of beside that in parallel with that. So how was the communication done back and forth across the country so people became aware of each other?
So I will just give you a bit of context. I am pretty recent to Sunrise. I've been here for about 6-7 months, but so I don't have exact recollection to how it happened, but
you can tell me how it works now, right? How do you get in touch with people now?
Yes. So if you want it, so at Sunrise Boston, there's this form where you can fill it out if you want to get involved. But if there's not a hub where you're from, you can create a new hub. And that's what, from my understanding, happened in Kentucky, in California. There are all these people, and especially now, Sunrise really blew up in November 2018 with the protest in Nancy Pelosi's office with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
And get all the attention. It sounds to me like it's a social media, Twitter and all these things that I don't understand, like Instagram and all things. That's how people found out and then sort of self-selected and volunteered to be part of the Sunrise Movement, right?
Yes.
And I guess if my impression, tell me if I'm wrong, is that a lot of the intensity comes from the recognition by younger people of the consequences they're going to face throughout their life, right? I mean, do you think that that's what resonated with people in Kentucky? I see there's groups in all across the country now. I mean, is that the message that grabs people? Did it grab you? I mean, let me put it personally to you. Is that what triggered your interest in being in the Sunrise Movement?
So you're asking, is the fact that I'm a young person, did that trigger me?
Well, I guess from what I've seen, I've seen a lot of kind of the Greta Thunberg stuff, right? I mean, recognizing that younger people like yourself will be living in a different world, right?
Yes.
And trying, and my question is whether or not that is generally a message you think resonates among the Sunrise Movement, the cadre of people. And I guess I tried to personalize that to you. Is that how you got caught up in it, or did you have a different reason for joining the Sunrise Movement?
Well, so the reason I joined the Sunrise Movement, so is actually I was involved with a lot of other advocacy groups beforehand, and then I saw So before the Green New Deal happened, I was really impressed by the Sunrise Movement's stigmatization of fossil fuel money and how they would go and have people sign, have politicians sign the No Fossil Fuel Money pledge. And but to answer your question about why I'm generally interested in this movement. I would say absolutely, and I would even say that many Republicans, many young Republicans, care disproportionately about this issue than the older Republicans, because I – and you can find polling that's, that backs that up, right? I mean, if you think about the last 18 years, I don't remember how many exactly were the hottest year on record, but it was the vast majority.
like 17 of them or something. Yes, I agree. It's a pretty impressive string of coincidences.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's see. The Sunrise Movement was in the right place at the right time with the right energy and the right message. Does the Sunrise Movement, again, I know that you're not like a spokesman for the Sunrise Movement, right? Do you think that the Sunrise Movement is involved in crafting policy now? Or are they supporting the policies that come out of, what is it, the New Consensus Group or this think tank out in Chicago that's trying to craft the policies? Because the Green New Deal, as you we all know, is sort of this shell into which we want to pour good policy, right?
Yes. So at the moment, we are not too, that's not our focus. Our focus is more about storytelling and going to representative offices and telling stories about why climate change is important to us and why we need bold action. That specific bold action, from what I understand, we're not working on right now. However, I can say I am the state policy team lead at Sunrise. And we're going to have, in a couple months, there's going to be a roundtable with all these different environmental groups, and we're going to think about how to craft a Massachusetts Green New Deal. So that's what I can tell you. But from my understanding, I do not believe that we're involved in the direct policy of the Green New Deal.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of computation and stuff that goes on in crafting those policies. Tell me, Jess, we'll mention this again before we're done. Say in a couple of months, you probably don't have the venue or specific times and dates yet. If somebody wanted to attend that roundtable, what website would they go to keep track of and hope to see when the event's planned? What is it, sunriseboston.com or something?
Yeah, so it'd be Sunrise Boston. One way to do that would be to go on the Facebook page. But I think that the roundtable is going to mostly be with leaders of the movement. I don't think it's going to be like an open invitation
thing. Got it. So tell me the roadshow. The roadshow was in Dorchester last week, right? It was.
Yes.
Tell me, were you part of the planning? Was it exciting to set up? Was it interesting? How did the show go over? What's your take-home lesson from running that show?
Oh, yeah. So I was in charge of media. I was in charge of outreach to stations like WGBH, WBUR, certain newspaper outlets. So I spent
the Climate Minute podcast. Don't forget that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I suppose one lesson is how long it would take to get all these networks coming together. I had to send an email, then send a call, and then make a call, and then send another follow-up email, and then send a media advisory.
Been sending Uber to the station to bring the report.
I wouldn't have been surprised if someone asked me that.
So, how did it looked to me like the show was fairly well attended, right? And the speakers were Ayanna Pressley and Ed Markey and Mariama White. Oh God,
Michelle Wu?
Michelle Wu. But Mariama, the minister from Dorchester, was there. She was great, and so it was really a really interesting show. So tell me, what's the from the perspective of, we talked about the Green New. Okay, I had a couple things. So many things I want to ask you about. Can we have you personally participated in attending sort of a lobbying session with a legislator? So tell me the story. What did you do? And the reason I ask is that many people listening to the podcast have never done that, and it's kind of intimidating. If you've never done it before, it can be very scary because you think a bolt of lightning is going to come hit you, or the rep's going to ask you a specific technical question you're not going to have an answer to, or something. So tell the story of what it's like to go lobby your member of Congress.
So, first of all, oftentimes when you're lobbying your member of Congress, you're actually not meeting with your member of Congress, you're meeting with an aide. And that's what I did when I went to Washington with Sunrise to get my representative, Joe Kennedy, to back the resolution for Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. And one thing that's really important to do whenever you're lobbying is to designate roles. So one person should be a policy wonk, should be ready with all those policy questions, but that should be about it.
And that just presupposes that, again, this is for people listening. Typically, on these lobbying things, it's not something you march in all by yourself. You're going in with a group of other people, and it's been organized, and there's a lot of setup. So the rep knows you're coming. They've the organizing people have provided a policy wonk that goes with you to answer the tough questions, et cetera, right? And so as the voter, I guess, what do you say when you go in and you see now you're facing the staff aide for Joe Kennedy, you've got your policy wonk there on the right. What do you say?
So first we go around, we talk about what climate change means to us, and if we're a constituent, we should say that we're a constituent. It's best to have as many constituents there. And then after we go around, talk about, bring in the emotional aspect of climate change. We then have the ask, which is, can Representative Kennedy sign this or co-sponsor this resolution? And if the answer is, I'll have to take a look at it, then we can say, okay, is there any materials that Representative Kennedy needs? And there are also a lot of other things to say in that instance when an aide or a representative hesitates. One thing that is very cool that I learned when I was actually lobbying with Citizens Climate Lobby is that when you're lobbying a representative, it's important to give that representative, if the representative is on the fence about supporting something, it's important to give that representative the tools to teach back to constituents why this policy or this idea is good for the community. So if they go back and have a town hall and a constituent, an angry constituent says, "Why did you do that?" then they can have those answers. So it's about making it as easy as possible for the representative to get on board.
Interesting, because I mean, I guess that's a good point. Because I always thought it was enough to show up and say I'm very interested in the legislation that my policy wonk is going to tell you about. But what you're saying is an added thing of saying, oh yeah, and here's the way to defend it, right? It's not just because I want it, but here's the your talking points, Ms. Congressperson, right?
Yeah, that's
Interesting,
one way to do it.
interesting, interesting. So does the Green New Deal have many? Not the Green New, Sunrise Movement. Do you have? You're targeting in Washington mostly, right? For the time being.
Oh yeah, federal politics.
You're targeting federal politics. Interesting, interesting. And all these guys are on break this week, right? They're all over the holiday. They're Joe Kennedy back here in the district. Do you know?
I'm not too up to date what's happening this week, but
Okay. Well, when they, I suppose, again, people listening, oftentimes when the representatives have a break, they all go back to the district and they have town hall meetings where they're dying for someone to come talk to them most of the time. I've been to visit guys, they're sitting in the fire station lonely waiting for somebody to come visit them, right? And you can actually make your case personally in that instance. Okay, so there's your lobbying question. I guess the other thing, do you have, I mean, let's discuss the following thing. The Green New Deal is, there are very few specifics underneath of it, but the people on the conservative media world are smashing this thing for being a Christmas tree of unrelated policies, being rank socialism that's going to steal everyone's money, you know, run your life, steal your wife kind of thing, and and it's going to cost too much. So do you guys have, I mean, how do you answer those charges? What are the things that people should know to respond when they hear those charges being made?
Okay, that's a great question. So I can tell you what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes, when it comes to the socialism question, I think that word has lost all of its meaning in American politics. And I think we can't even agree upon what that word means. Does socialism mean a complete government takeover of everything? Or does it mean that certain aspects of our life shouldn't be delegated to the free market and perhaps socialized or regulated? And I don't think the Green New Deal or any of the advocates for the Green New Deal, Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, none of them want government control of your local grocery store.
To take out the hamburgers, right?
Yeah, take out the hamburgers.
Right. They're not talking about taking the – okay, yeah, gotcha.
So the question, I think, is not whether or not we have socialization in America. It's how much. To answer – and I'll tell you something that I find very ironic about this. As you know, our president is lambasting the Green New Deal as socialism, he's propping up – he's bailing out uneconomical coal mines. So how is that not socialism and subsidizing wind and solar? How is that socialism? So I see that as a positive and a negative thing that Trump has done doing that. The positive – assuming that he's doing that to help people in coal mining communities is that he recognizes that the free market has its limits in helping people. It's extremely useful, but it has its limits. So that I would say. And finally, the last thing I'd say about socialism – or yeah, the debate about socialism in this country is I don't see how – the Green New Deal is broadly out of step with something that Franklin Roosevelt would have advocated for 80 years ago. I think it's more of a testament to how much the United States government over the last 40 years has been comfortable giving favors to the extremely wealthy that any sort of large-scale investment to in the people, in the general population, is seen as so radical. So if anything, I don't think – these ideas, you know, mass investment in infrastructure and all those great things is any sort of – it's not very radical in the context of 20th century American history.
Certainly in the broad mainstream of the flow of the original New Deal. You're quite right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I do want to so you had some other things.
There was a socialism thing. And I guess the other question that I think oftentimes is the thing that's thrown against the Green New Deal is that somehow things like health care and a job guarantee are extraneous to the central point, and they say, let's just build wind turbines, right? And I think I can make a case that just building wind turbines is not the right way to go. But I'm interested in what, I mean, what do you say to that argument? I mean, why are all these other elements included in the conception of the Green New Deal?
Okay, so if there's going to be a large-scale technological change in American society as the Green New Deal is proposing, there will be disruptions in the economy. What I think universal health coverage does is it minimizes that pain. So if someone in a certain industry loses their job more quickly than otherwise, they would have health coverage that they wouldn't have gotten if there wasn't universal coverage. And when it comes to the job guarantee, the idea, I think, is that Well, if we're gonna create this new economy, why not make it as inclusive as possible? If someone wants to get in on the action of transforming our energy system from fossil fuels to renewable, why shouldn't someone who, why can't they be rewarded if they want to get on an action?
And I guess the argument I'm making is that we want the Green New Deal to be basically a 50 to 100-year program of transforming the whole society. And if you're going to do that, you need buy-in from the entire society, because inevitably in 20 years the politics will shift and people will start questioning the wisdom of the Green New Deal, at which point you want everybody bought in, right? You want everyone committed with, with jobs, with health care, that you can't walk away from it. I mean, so that sort of inclusiveness, I think, rings off of your point that, I mean, if you're talking about a societal change of the scope that we need, then you need to bring the whole society away. It's not just more windmills, as important as those are, right? Super, super, super. Well, Chris, I think we got to put it down there. We try to keep our podcasts to 20 minutes or so. Let me just tell everyone. So I'm going to ask you in a minute. How people can follow the Sunrise Movement and the work that you're doing. But before I go there, I want to remind everyone that the MCAN Local Environmental Action Conference is this coming Saturday, April 27th at Worcester State University. You can still attend. Please consider it. There's a website, localenvironmentalaction.org. You can check out all the great speakers and all of the great sessions. So Chris, let me ask you, where should you send people? Where do you want people to go click on?
Yes, go on the website. Go on the Sunrise Movement website, and I believe there's a tab that's called Join Us.
And what's the URL for people who are is it Sunrise Movement MA? So it's just sunrisemovement.com, all right?
Oh yeah, so it's sunrisemovement.com, and yeah, there are quite. I'm actually going on it right now.
I think it's all one word.
Yes. Oh, sunrisemovement.org. That's
Dot
what it
org.
is.
Okay.
.org.
All right. Well, there you go. So everybody listening, keep up with the Sunrise Movement. They're way ahead of the rest of us. You're going to be chasing and huffing and puffing just to keep up with all the good stuff they're doing. Let me say, we're going to close where we always close. Before I even say that, let me say you can check out the links to what we talked about. I'll put up some at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. We'll put up a link to this show on the Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, et cetera, all the major podcast distributions, and of course on Apple Podcast. Please, please, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, using regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you.
And I want to send a special shout out to D.R. Tucker, who, while he's not on the show lately, continues to send us excellent information week after week. And really appreciate it, D.R. So thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.